What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Here's your money briefing for Monday, June 7th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. For decades, if you wanted to buy shares of a company that's about to go public through an IPO, or initial public offering, you generally had to be a big Wall Street institution. But lately, there's been a big push to open up access to IPO shares to individual investors.
Small investors have really become a bigger force in how stocks trade and in how stocks are covered and talked about. And so there is just perhaps some interest now for companies in trying to court that small investor audience.
Coming up, WSJ Heard on the Street columnist Telus Demos will talk about how some trading platforms like Robinhood are allowing individual investors to get in on the IPO action and the risks that go along with it. That's after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
With so many companies going public on stock exchanges, the IPO market has already raised a staggering $158 billion so far this year. That money has come almost exclusively from big, well-connected investment firms. But as individual investors become a bigger force in the market, there are efforts underway to make IPO shares available to them as well. Here to talk about it is WSJ Heard on the Street columnist Telus Demos. Telus, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Telus, let's make sure we're all on the same page here. An IPO is when a company goes public and offers shares to the public for the first time. But traditionally, that means big banks and investment firms get a hold of the shares first, before your average everyday investors can. So where does that leave those individual investors?
Traditionally, it's meant that individual investors, you know, kind of small, self-directed investors, they might have an online brokerage account. It means that they really couldn't buy that IPO until it began trading. And what that means is that they missed out on any gains from the offering price at the IPO to where it started trading in the market. That is what is known as the pop for an IPO. And historically, it's been a pretty sizable number. Over a very long period of time, over decades, it averages, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20%. And it means that retail investors didn't have access to that for the most part.
And this has been a long-running issue. Why haven't individual investors been allowed into this process on a larger scale until now? And what are the arguments in favor of opening things up?
Historically, the Wall Street banks that underwrite IPOs and a lot of the companies going public, because there's such overwhelming demand for almost any IPO relative to the supply of shares, they've been able to basically choose who they want as their investors. And the thinking historically has been you want to have big, long-term institutional investors as kind of the base of your new company as it goes public. And so the idea has been to get it into the hands of investors who've spent a lot of time with the company, who really understand the company, are looking to own it for a long period of time. And so traditionally, the thinking has been to really focus the distribution of that IPO stock to that investor base and not to the wider retail public. But the flip side of that is selling it to a wider audience of people who might be willing to pay more for that stock would help companies, quote, leave less money on the table, meaning they'd be able to sell their stock at a higher price and not let some of that value bleed into that first day opening pop.
So now there are some attempts to do just that and open up IPOs to more everyday investors. Robinhood and SoFi are talking about it. What can you tell us about their plans?
So Robinhood and SoFi are going to be able to offer some IPOs to their customers at the offering price. Not every deal in the market, but some deals. Their customers will then be able to say, yes, I'd like to participate in that. I'd like to buy this number of shares. And then once that IPO actually prices, they'll be able to confirm that they want to participate at that price. Now, because IPOs are always limited in share, there's usually far more demand than there is supply of shares, customers are probably not going to get the number of shares that they'd actually like to buy. So Robinhood and SoFi both have ways of deciding how to portion out the shares that they do have available based on certain criteria. At Robinhood, it will be primarily random. SoFi will have some other considerations that go into that. But at that point, the investor will essentially be buying the IPO right at the IPO price, and they'll be participating in that first day upside, or in some cases, that first day downside as well.
Okay. And are there going to be any restrictions on individual investors who want to get involved?
The answer to that varies. Different programs might have different guidelines for which of their customers are able to participate. There might be some asset or activity qualifications. But one important thing, too, about both the programs offered by Robinhood and SoFi are that they want to discourage people from actively trading the stocks immediately after buying them. Both of them have what are called flipping policies, meant to discourage investors from getting the stock in the IPO and then immediately selling them, that is, selling them before having them for 30 days. And so both of them will have policies where if an investor does that, if they buy the stock and then in the IPO and then immediately sell it, they won't be able to participate in future deals for some period of time.
Now, some investors might have an image in their head that owning IPO shares translates to a cash windfall. But what are the risks that go along with the potential reward?
Well, IPOs do pop historically. Some deals have a big pop, but it's far from guaranteed. There have been many deals, even for really hot companies, where you haven't seen a lot of pop. So you're always kind of taking the risk that you don't get any benefit from that kind of first day gain. And in fact, the stock might go down on the first day. There's also evidence that IPO companies don't necessarily outperform the market over time. You might think that every IPO company is a hot growth company and will do better than the market, but historically that's not the case. Over a long period of time, if you'd held IPO stocks for a couple of years, you might have really only just matched the performance of the market. And so really you want to think about buying an IPO like you would any other company. It's a single stock. It comes with a lot of the same risks. The pop could help your returns, but over the long run is not going to necessarily make a huge difference. And so you want to think about, do I like this company? Do I want to own it at the IPO price? Do I want to own it at the price the next day? You really want to take the same approach you would to any single stock investment that you would for an IPO. It's really tough to treat an IPO company radically differently. But there are some aspects of IPO companies that investors should be aware of if they own them. There are things like the end of the lockup period. IPOs might get added to an index in the future. So there are some special things that happen with newly public companies that you want to understand. But really fundamentally, I would say for most investors, they want to think about it like, do I want to own this company at this price? Do I think it has a good long-term potential? Really the same way you would any single stock investment.
And just putting this all in context, there's been a broader push to open up access to private companies before they go public for individual investors in recent years. Why is that?
There's thinking from both the investor side and from the company side. On company's side, I think there's been a movement among some companies, especially those backed by venture investors, that they don't want to give into this IPO process where you leave a little bit of money on the table in order to get the right investors into your deal. Some companies feel like they just want to sell the stock at the market price. So that leads them to then say, let's open up this IPO in some way, shape, or form to a wider investing audience, and then we'll just get the people who want to pay the most for the stock. On the investor side, obviously, we've seen across markets, you know, over the last couple of years, small investors have really become a bigger force in how stocks trade and in how stocks are covered and talked about. And so there is just perhaps some interest now for companies in trying to court that small investor audience and maybe take their IPO to them, communicate more with those smaller investors about the company. That might just be one of the changes we're seeing in markets. So perhaps this is the juncture at which we really start to see a major change in how IPOs are thought about going forward.
All right, that's WSJ Heard on the Street columnist Telus Demos. Telus, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, JR.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.